Some of the views expressed on the Mormon Channel are solely for the education and inspiration of our audience and may not represent the official position of the church.
For members of the church, education is not merely a good idea. It's a commandment. We are to learn of things both in heaven and in the earth and under the earth. Things which have been, things which are, things which must shortly come to pass, things which are at home, things which are abroad.
They move, they sway, they leap and glide. The grace and the athleticism of the body in motion is the world of dance. Welcome to Insights on the Mormon Channel from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm Marilee Stallings. In the studio today, I have with me Shaney Robison and Kurt Holman from the dance department at Brigham Young University in Provo, Utah. Shaney, Kurt, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Why don't we get started by having you tell us a bit about yourselves and the type of dance you work with and how you each got interested in this field. Kurt, let's start with you.
Okay, I work with the ballroom dance program at BYU. I direct the ballroom dance division there. And if you ask about how I got started in dance or what kind of drew me to dance, I think as a young boy, I was probably a typical boy involved in sports, Little League baseball and everything. But I got interested in dance when the old Golden Green Balls from years and years ago.
I remember those.
You remember those. Mm-hmm. We had an opportunity to learn a particular dance, and I really gained a great interest in it. And it was something that I liked and started participating in, mostly just kind of extracurricularly here and there. I always wanted to be part of any dance production that was put together. But it wasn't until I came to BYU as a student in the early 80s that I was able to really start building my interest in ballroom dancing in particular. I joined the ballroom dance company there and danced with the company there during my undergraduate work. A number of different circumstances went on. As I graduated, I actually ended up working for Word Perfect. I graduated with a business degree. I worked for Word Perfect for a number of years, but had the opportunity to pursue my graduate work in dance and in the end become a professor at BYU in the ballroom dance division. On a side note, I met my wife also in the ballroom dance program there, and together her and I were able to compete professionally as well. So it was kind of a path that happened, that unfolded gradually. It wasn't the intent, but it's where I ended up. So that gives you a little bit of history on me.
Shaney?
Well, I'm originally from Boise, Idaho, and I came to BYU in 1990. I earned my BA in 1995 and my MA in 1999. After that, I was hired part-time for 5 years and have been full-time now for 6 years. So currently, I'm an associate professor of dance in the ballet division. Like Kurt, I am the division administrator only in the ballet division, and I also am the artistic director of BYU Theater Ballet. And I actually didn't even think about being a dancer, a ballet dancer. I really wanted to be a gymnast. That was my dream. That was my goal. And my father said absolutely not, that I would definitely break an ankle or a leg or something would happen. And they were wise enough to put me in ballet. They didn't realize the extent of the injuries that could be found by doing ballet, which I experienced most of those. But they really wanted to put me in ballet to avoid the awkward teenage years, that they felt like, well, this will help with her grace, her poise, her posture. And in fact, ballet dancers often are the most clumsy in real life. And so I don't know that it's helped or achieved their goal, but through that outlet, I was able to achieve my goals, that I fell in love with ballet and really put my heart and soul into it to really end up where I am today. This was my goal as a youngster, actually, to direct my own university ballet company.
Wow.
And I've been blessed to be able to do that.
Now, how old is dance as an artistic expression? I just have to ask this question. I mean, you know, because we're doing foundational information,
right,
here, so
I don't know. It seems almost to me that dance is as old as time is. I can't imagine that there was a time where there wasn't some sort of expression through movement. It doesn't seem to me that it would be something that just was invented, you know, at a particular time. It seems like it's probably something akin to the human condition.
Definitely. It began, too. We have historical evidence that it began with lineage-based societies, or what used to be known as primitive societies, that it was a form of expression, like Kurt said, that people really naturally did as part of their culture, as part of their tradition, that it was a way to express, but also a way to get food. They did rain dances. They did different dances that would help them in society. They did initiation dances as part of their cultures that helped adolescents move to the next stage of life. It really has been integral in the human condition.
You almost had your initiation dance ritual when they put you in ballet.
That's right. That's right.
At a young age. Let's get more specific about what you do, ballet and ballroom. Who invented ballet and how did it expand from that initial start?
Well, I looked back at a brief history that Sandra Allen and I wrote of ballet history. So I'll just bring out those main points. It actually began in the Italian Renaissance, where the folk dances of the common people were sophisticated into noble court dances. And these became what were called the pre-classic forms. And it is from these dances that the basic movement vocabulary of ballet developed. So with this introduction of Italian court tradition into the French courts through the marriage of Catherine de' Medici to French Henry Duke de Lorraine's in 1533, we find the development of the ballet de cour. So it moved from the courts in Italy to the courts in France due to Catherine de' Medici. And she is actually one of the ones responsible for the first ballet. And that occurred in 1581. And it was called Ballet Comique de la Reine Louise. And it was actually considered the first ballet because it was a production that included court dances, horses, music, costumes, libretto, everything, pageantry, everything that contributed to a common theme. So this collaboration, in addition to many productions around that same time, established the birth of ballet in the European royal courts approximately 500 years ago.
Now, since Catherine de' Medici brought this, mm-hmm. and it's a court dance, who then were the dancers? Who were the participants?
The participants were actually the courtiers, the people of the court. They would come and perform these court dances as a way to mingle, as a way to entertain. And it was interesting because the royalty really set up the stage for that because they were typically the best dancers. They were taught by the dancing masters. And whomever was the next best dancer was able to stand closest to the prince. And so it went down the line like that. So it was really a good mark on an individual who could be the closest to the prince because they were the most talented.
So then when I read many years ago about Louis XIV mm-hmm. was a very expert ballet dancer, this was why. I mean, he was...
Yes, he was trained by the best dancing master at that time, and he did refine the technique. So it started with Catherine de' Medici, but in the 1600s, Louis XIV really progressed it to a classic form. He formed the Royal Academy of Dance, and that's where the specifics, the technique, everything moved from being just a court dance, which was very exact in its own way, but it became more of a technique where students trained in the technique form and became skilled dancers.
Kurt, tell us a little bit about the beginnings of ballroom dancing.
Well, if you go back even into the mid-1700s, it's interesting to look. We tend to look at ballroom dance now as a big umbrella and all these dances fit underneath it. But in many ways, what we think of as ballroom dancing today is really a kind of a gathering of many different types of social dances. The very first one, the waltz or the Viennese waltz, took place in the mid-1700s, amid great controversy, a man and a lady actually touching each other and dancing and whirling about and spinning about. So it was met with a lot of controversy during that time. But the beginnings of what we kind of think of in our mind, we think about Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, a man and a woman dancing together. That really didn't happen until about the mid-1700s and then kind of took form as it moved into the later later part of the 1700s into the 1800s. If you go to the early 1900s of here in America, a man by the name of Vernon and Irene Castle popularized social dancing. And when I say social dancing, dancing for social purposes. I'd like to introduce myself. I'm so-and-so. And off they go onto the floor and they dance. They formulated – you can also look at how ballroom dance began to grow with changes in music as well. Different rhythms that would come along. Waltz has a triplet, 1-2-3, 1-2-3. Well, different rhythms or different tempos that you have in music, all of a sudden you could do a foxtrot to a different type of a tempo. Obviously, the 1920s had the Charleston and different things like that. But they had a common component, and that is the man and the lady danced together. So it was a shared dance between members of the opposite sex. I take a look at what we do now, and we have a very structured form of ballroom dances and Latin American dances. It's really important, I think, even for people that are heavily involved in the competitive form of ballroom dancing, to reflect back on the roots, which really were about an organic relationship between a man and a woman. And the music's playing, and off they go onto the floor, and certainly mimicking courtship.
Well, and I remember my parents talking about, because they grew up in the 1940s.
Yeah.
And so it was a big thing to your friends would all pile into somebody's functioning car.
Yeah.
And you rumble down the country roads to this place 20 miles away. And
they have these great – they used to have these great dance halls where you'd go. Yeah. Those,
and they would have a wonderful time. And it was definitely for courtship. It was a place to go and
well, and there's something
the
nostalgic for me to think about those times back in the 40s and the 50s where they had ballrooms where you would go and you would dance in ballrooms and they would have bands that would play. There was one I know years ago when I was a student in high school, we actually went to an old ballroom in Salt Lake City called the Terrace Ballroom. And I think it was one of the old ballrooms of the time, but there was something very nostalgic about walking in there and seeing that beautiful hardwood floor and where the band set up. And those are kind of moments of time gone by. We don't see that as much anymore.
Well, and then what I also liked is then they talked about you danced with everybody.
Yeah, for sure.
Everybody danced with everybody. You danced with your brother. You danced with your cousin. You danced with your schoolmate. You just danced. Everybody just danced. You know, it was no big deal. You danced.
Right. Everybody danced together and they filled out – they even had dance cards where you fill out a card and you get to know each other and you know that you're going to dance with, you know, almost everybody in the ballroom that night. So a great way to have a socialization, recreation for sure.
Thank you for joining us on the Mormon Channel from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. You're listening to Insights, where we are discussing the world of dance with Shani Robison and Kurt Holman from the dance department at Brigham Young University. Now, Shani, before we started recording, we were actually talking a little bit about contemporary dance. You mentioned that it was a kind of an offshoot or a stepping away from ballet. So we had the grace of ballet, and then contemporary dance emerged. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yes, ballet was really became set as a tradition in Europe, and then it moved to Russia. And at that time, there were artists in the early 20th century that said, you know, I'm not really liking these three-hour-long ballets. I really think that we can do something else, say something else in a different way. And one of those first contemporary movers would be Michael Fokine. And he actually had his tradition in ballet, and most of these contemporary dancers had their tradition in ballet. And they did. They wanted to do something different. So Kurt and I were discussing, well, maybe it was a rebellion, but it was an offshoot of ballet that they wanted to do more with it, to be more natural, to express in a different way, and to maybe cover different themes than the typical fairy tale ballet that was so common and so prevalent at that time. But some of the other important people of the contemporary movement were Loie Fuller. She danced with scarves and did things in front of lights and gave the audience a different visual effect than they had ever seen before. Isadora Duncan, Martha Graham, Ted Shawn, those individuals really broke free and started to explore a new, freer form of dance through contemporary modern dance.
They broke away from ballet, but you also mentioned that they also had to come back to ballet. And why was that?
Well, it's interesting that so many of them started in ballet, and then we find through the ages that that technique, that technical base is so important, and that's why ballet has been around for centuries. That today you see the contemporary dancers taking ballet classes, that they realize that technique is unique, and that technique will build strength, flexibility, coordination, all the necessary things to do the form of dance. In fact, contemporary and ballet are often merged these days into to a fusion form that many ballet companies do, as well as contemporary companies.
So all dance requires discipline, and especially if they're in a performing or a competing form of dance, what are the rigors of each of them?
I think Shani could attest to the fact that ballet is very rigorous.
I often
talk to my students in my ballroom dance classes, and I ask them, I said, how many in here have taken ballet? A number of them raised their hands. Some of the boys in the class have never taken a dance class before. They showed it to ballroom class. But I ask them, how long do you stand at the bar in a typical ballet class? Meaning they hold onto the bar and they do exercises to develop their posture and their leg strength and foot strength. They say about three quarters of the class. Is that correct, Shani?
That's right.
And I said, why do they do that? And it's to develop the strength. It's that that technique, that rigor of the technique is insurmountable, really. I mean, it's a component of ballet.
Definitely. And the posture that's required in ballet helps with all other dance forms as well. It is. It's definitely rigorous. You have set and specific movements, just as in ballroom. Ballroom and ballet are really compatible.
There's some definitely some similarities. You know, the posture that you achieve. I often say you can tell a ballet dancer because they stand like they're a ballet dancer. And that doesn't come by taking one or two ballet classes. It comes from taking years of being in the studio, right, and doing tendu and doing all the ballet figures that they do to develop their strength and their technique. But the rigor in the ballroom area is a little bit different because we're not individual dancers, a ballroom dancer. And if you move into the competitive side of ballroom dancing, there's a very structured form of technique of how body weight is transferred from one person to the next person. And that doesn't come either overnight. There's a difference between the competitive arm of ballroom dancing and social dancing. They exist together, but to really become a developed ballroom dancer, it requires a lot of technique for sure. A lot of time spent in the studio with one other person. And I know that many ballroom dancers feel like, you know, they're trying to find that perfect partner. And they said it would be so much easier if I just didn't have to worry about having my partner on the same page. But in ballroom dance, you have to have your partner on the same page as you. You have to have this, you know, we often say that you have to be like a funny term, but a professional ballroom dancer that was here a little while ago said we have to become like cows. And everybody had furrowed brows and thought, well, what does she mean we have to become a cow? Well, we have four legs but one brain. And it's true. It takes a lot to – there's a whole different dynamic when you're working with a partnership. Because it's a little bit like a marriage. You know, you have to give and take and figure out how to make things work.
Well, now, ballroom dancing, definitely you have to have a partner in order to perform ballroom dancing. Now, ballet and contemporary dance, not necessarily. However, you do have partner dances.
Definitely, definitely. We have what is called pas de deux, which are those duets. And so we really have a mix of the individual dancer. We have where the dancer has to work with a core of dancers, so they're doing all of the same thing. Other times they're working on stage doing all different things. Then we have the duets. So there is a mix of disciplines there that is required and a sensitivity to those different layers.
Now, contemporary dance can be quite different, whereas with ballet, with ballroom, and not always with ballroom, but usually with ballet, grace is the point. But in contemporary dance, grace is not necessarily the point. What is the point? Because it can be quite different. Some people can be quite put off by it.
Yes, it can be very unique. And I think it just depends on the individual choreographer and the message that choreographer is trying to send. So a lot of times that is the point, is to send a message, to reflect societal issues, to make a statement I think contemporary dance often does that. Also, contemporary dance, I've noticed, really tends in a lot of ways to focus more inward. And ballet is much more, if you look at the classics, is much more presentational, that it's open to the audience, you're showing things off, and modern dance turns into more of a cerebral art form, that the dancer is internally focused and the audience is then part of that process as they perform.
I think in some ways you can compare it with ballet and ballroom. You kind of get it right away. You understand mm-hmm. what the purpose mm-hmm. is. You understand what they're doing. But I think you can compare contemporary dance to take a different art form, painting. And sometimes you'll go and you'll look at a piece of art, and you'll think, now, how is that art? Well, you know, why? It's not a beautiful picture of, you know, a vase with roses, but there's something in there that evokes some sort of emotion. And I think in that way, it kind of is the same as contemporary dance. Sometimes you're trying to evoke a certain emotion. And so you may not get it right away, but there is definitely a deeper meaning that comes through. And I think sometimes also it's a developed taste as well, that the more you watch it, the more you understand, oh, okay, I understand where they're coming from. And like Shaney said, it's more inward focus, trying to create something that is unique to that individual. And I think in many ways, modern dance or contemporary dance is a unique voice for the dancer, where I think ballet and ballroom both have been very structured in how – in what you do, and this is the exactly right way to do it. Contemporary forms is there's not so much a right and wrong. Of course, there's a kinesthetic way of moving that's appropriate. But if this is kind of what you're feeling and what you're trying to portray, the process is equally as important as the product. Where ballet and ballroom are a little bit more product based.
I remember a few years ago attending an evening of ballet at Ballet West, and one of the pieces that they did was a contemporary piece. So here was where a ballet troupe did a contemporary piece, and it was an impressive piece. And I remember watching that going, this is really wow stuff. I don't know that I understand it. But then by the time it was finished, I went, oh, my word, what an incredible statement about the attitude of Americans at the end of the 20th century. It was just like this great big, oh, whatever.
Yeah.
And that's how it felt. It was like they were just on the verge of doing something and, oh, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever. And so I found myself very much drawn into it once I allowed myself to think about it. So you're right. It is a very cerebral type of performance. Mm-hmm. So maybe the counsel is don't just discount it.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Give it some room.
For
definitely.
Sure.
Definitely.
Each dance form has its own style of costuming. So I have to ask, Shaney, how hard is it to toe dance in ballet?
Well, pointe shoes are very hard, and so it can be very difficult, and it can be very painful. I have to say that I'm grateful that I don't have to dance in pointe shoes anymore.
But you did.
But I did, yes. And it was painful. And you have to just rely on the strength in your legs and your core and your shoes. And you hope that all works together so that you can do it.
Because when it's well done, it is very impressive to watch.
It is. It's amazing. It's the ethereal nature of it is absolutely stunning. There's
it's
nothing
the epitome
like
of
it.
Grace, right? It's
exactly.
Just like this long,
because it looks like they're
gravity.
Floating.
Yeah.
That's right.
It looks
it's,
like they're floating. They're not touching
beautiful.
The ground.
Right. Yeah.
That's right.
And then I also have to ask, does tutu have an English translation?
Not that I know of. I really don't know the origin of that, except that around the world, that is the name for the female costume. It started out as court gowns that weighed up to 150 pounds.
Oh, wow.
And they kept shortening those. It became a romantic tutu and then a classical tutu. And so it is just one of those universal terms.
It's just
what it is.
It is what it is, and we don't know if it's French or Italian. Now, ballroom dancing as a social entertainment, it mm-hmm. almost died.
Yeah.
What kept it alive?
Well, I'd have to maybe ask you, social entertainment. We spoke earlier about the ballrooms and how it really was, you know, it was a mode of courtship and entertainment back in the 40s and the 50s for sure. But I think it's interesting to look at the way society starts to change. And you look at what happened in the 1960s. And the 1970s and the role of a man and a woman in society sometimes and always, not always necessarily for the better, is somewhat changed and challenged. And I think that there are people that argue that ballroom dancing is very culturally, politically incorrect because the man is leading the lady, and how dare a man lead a lady to do something, right?
Yeah.
There are certain studios in certain parts of the country where they won't allow you to say this is the man's part and this is the lady's part. You say this is the leader part and this is the follower part. They want to keep them separate, you know, so which seems kind of silly. But when you say a diet as a social entertainment form, there's always been ballroom dance aficionados, people who keep that alive in their own subculture. But to the scale that it used to be, I don't know that I've seen it. I don't know that society and our current present state lends itself to dance halls where a band's playing foxtrots and waltzes and different things like that. So to some degree, it's a moment in time that's frozen that may not return to. And that might be because of the social setting that surrounds why we dance.
You know, it almost sounds like the same thing happened with ballroom as what happened with ballet, that started out as a social entertainment in the courts and then moved into a performance. And mm-hmm. and we're kind of seeing the same thing now happening today.
Yeah, I think that's a great observation, because now I remember years ago when I was teaching, first started teaching here at BYU, I would go in and do a lecture to a class, and I'd ask the student. Now, BYU's always had a very strong ballroom dance program from the 1960s, really. I mean, it's been around a long time. So, but I would ask many of the students, by show of hands, how many had never heard of ballroom dancing until you came to BYU? And about 10 years ago, over half the class would raise their hand. They'd never heard of ballroom dancing before. They'd seen Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, but that was about it. If I asked that same question today, virtually everybody's heard about ballroom dancing, with the, you know, with the So You Think You Can Dance and Dancing with the Stars. It's part of our vocabulary now. It's what we see on television. It's become very popularized. So,
but again, it's now moved to a
performance. It's performance for entertainment purposes, for sure. And you know, I've been around long enough to know what it was like before and what it's like after. I know that the studios throughout the United States had a huge influx in business when these shows hit the airs, because people thought, well, I want to learn how to do this. No longer was it just I need to learn how to do the wedding waltz to dance at my wedding. You know, that that was the main staple at the dance studios around the country. But there's so much more interest now. And so to some degree, I think people enjoy it in a social aspect, but I think it's become so technically stylized that we see in the television productions that it is now a performance. It is a performing art. I mean, they are there to perform and to entertain and to.
And now it's also an Olympic venue.
Well, for years they've wanted to make it be part of the Olympics. It's not actually part of the Olympics.
It's an exhibition.
They've had it as an exhibition. I just came back from some meetings last week that I am a member of the National Dance Council of America, and they bring this up periodically, that the amateur body in the United States belongs to the USOC, and they're trying to get ballroom dance to become part of the Olympics. But they've been trying since the 1960s to have it become part of the Olympics. Ballroom dancing, along with about 1,000 other sports that are trying to become part of the Olympics. You know, so I'm not so sure that'll ever happen. But there is a group of people out there that are really pushing for it. But you know, the form itself has always been considered an art form. But there are many people that want to push it into the sport category as well. So.
Thank you for joining us on the Mormon Channel from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. You're listening to Insights, where we are discussing the world of dance with Shani Robison and Kurt Holman from the dance department at Brigham Young University. Dance requires freedom of movement. What are your thoughts on costuming and modesty? How do you work with that?
Well, it's a really interesting question, because that is something that we are constantly dealing with at Brigham Young University. We want to make sure that the costuming reflects what we're doing and shows the body enough to enhance the movement, but not be immodest. And out in the world on these TV shows that Kurt mentioned, that's a balance that isn't working, because I find that the costuming is quite revealing. Mm-hmm. And here at BYU, we try to focus on the modesty, but at the same time honor the art form.
And I think particularly in the ballroom area, some of the things that are shown on television, you know, your eyebrows raise, you think, wow.
Oh, yeah.
That's really pushing the envelope. And I think any art form, whether it be dance, whether it be music, can push the envelope to a point where we're not comfortable with. And we always are constantly looking at how we costume our dancers and make sure that we're you know, our costumes reflect the nature of the dance, but we never want to go step over that line where we've all of a sudden embraced what we see happening maybe on a larger scale. And if we ever feel that it's something that detracts from the spirit rather than adds to the spirit, you stay away from it. And I think that we've over years of costuming and presenting our material, we've found a way to present it in a modest way.
And still be classy.
And still be mm-hmm. able to be true to the form itself.
Yes.
And I think that any great artist, sometimes their mantra is, you know, their art is their life and, you know, there's no one that can tell them what to do differently. We value different things. You know, mm-hmm. we think that our art forms are actually enhanced by keeping them in a perspective of modesty and a modest demeanor as well.
I remember a few years ago, some BYU dance groups performed up at the Conference Center Theater in Salt Lake City. And I remember watching one of these performances and they did a piece. The music was the hymn, If You Could Hide to Kolob. And, of course, it was all orchestrated and everything. And it was, I think, one of the stunning parts. It wasn't just the choreography. It wasn't just the music. It was those beautiful, beautiful costumes. They were so flowing. It was just stunning. I'm sorry. I'm getting teary-eyed just thinking about it.
Actually, I think what you said, though, is important to bring up because those components – is what make up the dance, the costuming, the choreography, the music.
Yeah.
And all those things contribute. And, you know, you mentioned that all three components had an effect upon you.
Mm-hmm.
The very exact same effect that it had on you, if those three components were used differently, they could have a completely different effect on you. So the effect that dance can have on an audience member is powerful and important. And I think that we recognize that. I know that ballet – you know, they spend a lot of time working on their costuming as well. You want to make sure that you're presenting your material in a way that would be uplifting. And I'm glad to hear that you were uplifted. That was a piece done by our ballroom dance company. So I'm glad to hear that it affected you that way. But all three components make up the final product.
Many parents may want to start their child in some dance program. What's a good age to start? And what questions should parents be asking of instructors?
For ballet, a good age to start is age 8. A lot of parents put their little people in dance at around age 3 or 4. And what tends to happen, unless they have an extreme passion for it, is they tend to burn out quickly. They just don't have the attention span at those young ages. And they're really not working on ballet technique. They're really working on more of a creative approach to dance, which is fine for the movement's sake of movement. But if they're wanting to go on to the ballet path and to excel at ballet, age 8 is the best age to start.
And what about asking questions? Are there any questions that they should ask an instructor?
Well, I think first of all they would need to go to the school that they're looking at and watch some classes so that they see the level of teaching, they see the level of the dancers, that they're able to see if this is really a good fit for their child. Also, I think it's important to ask when they typically put the children on point. If they tend to put them on before age 11 at the earliest, then that's a problem for the future growth of those children. So they need to make sure that sound practices are occurring in that school or studio.
You know, it's interesting because I have a 6-year-old right now, little girl. So when you say, "What you know, how do you start?" I'm a dancer myself, and I'm asking myself, what's the best way? Because, you know, she dances around the living room like all little kids do, and I'm thinking,
yes,
we want to get her started. What am I looking for? What do I look for? My wife and I both felt like we wanted a ballet-type experience. I really respect what Shani said, that sometimes you start them too early. Maybe combined with starting them too early is how intense it is early on. That's when that burnout happens, and I think we see it in our form as well, but one thing that we felt strongly about is we also wanted to have age-appropriate movement because sometimes, you know, depending on the approach of different studios, sometimes they'll have young children doing things jazz movement that you feel uncomfortable with when you watch little teeny girls doing things that are what you might see on MTV or something, you know.
Right, so, that the grown adults are doing.
Right, and you're thinking, I'm not so sure an 8-year-old should be doing that sort of movement. So you're looking – we were looking for someone that could develop some good technique. We started in a great little ballet school, and she meets only once a week, which is great for her. You know, it's great for her right now, and we want to make sure that it's always something that's delightful and that she wants to participate in. And from the ballroom point of view, you know, you'll see – and I know that Shaney's seen the same thing. You'll see people who really want their kids to be fabulous, and they'll immerse them so early on. And almost across the board, when they're immersed so early on at such an intense level, by the time they hit 16, they're done. They're done with their experience. Have you found that same thing?
Definitely.
They're done because they've spent their entire life in the studios, and now all of a sudden they thought, I think I want to do something else, which I think is sad. In the ballroom area, we actually think, you know what, go have – for your girls, go have them have creative dance experiences and ballet experiences. And then we think, you know, around age 10 or 11, that's perfect time. In fact, we don't think it's really beneficial until they start for our program. It's better for them to start when they're in fifth grade or sixth grade having a ballroom dance experience. And even at that level, it's more about developing rhythm and posture and different things. But for the boys, it's unique because my wife runs the ballroom dance youth program. And we actually embrace little boys who are involved in football and baseball and basketball. In fact, if they say, I've got baseball on this day, great, no problem, go. Great. We don't want them to just be a dancer only because the burnout level happens too quickly. So for the little boys, we're saying, play soccer, play baseball. But you know what? Tuesday, Thursdays, come and learn how to do ballroom dancing. And what's interesting is when you do that, by the time they become a high school age student or something, some of them say, you know what? I think ballroom dance is my love, and sports go to the side, and they really become great ballroom dancers. But when it happens early on, there's a great potential for burnout. Wouldn't you agree?
Definitely, definitely.
Well, good information. I'm assuming that not only are you all teachers, but you're also performers and you have competed, Kurt. Do you have some experiences, some favorite experiences in your performances that you'd like to share?
Probably my most favorite performance was when I performed the Black Swan, Pas de Deux from Swan Lake, and it was at BYU. And I really had one of those moments that all performers dream of, where I was balancing what seemed like forever on my pointe shoe, and I was hitting every turn and just doing everything just as I had hoped it would turn out on stage. And I really had that exhilaration that comes from performing, that feeling like nothing else. There's nothing else like performing. And the thrill of it, the excitement, the adrenaline, everything contributed to that moment. And definitely it was – I had prepared for that. But the outcome was more than I had expected, and I've always treasured that experience.
Now, performing is great, but when you know you have performed well – that is exhilarating.
It really is.
Exhilarating if you've also had times when you haven't performed well. So sometimes
when you have that
moment where it all comes together, it doesn't always happen that way. You know, sometimes there's problems but when it does happen, it's a real magical moment that almost seems surreal in a way. My wife and I competed professionally for about 6 years, and we were twice invited to actually present a piece of choreography in the ballroom dance category called cabaret, which is a man and woman doing lifts kind of in a ballroom form. But we were invited to present our choreography at the British Championships in Blackpool, England.
Wow.
Twice, which was a great honor because you couldn't just sign up. You had to be invited, and your country had to send you as their representative. Those are moments you don't forget because they happen just once or twice in your life. They're very special for sure.
What advice do you have for people who think, ugh, I could never do that?
You can always do something.
That's right.
If you can walk, you can dance, you know. So, you know, try it. You know,
definitely.
Particularly in your older years with your spouse, you know, take a ballroom dance class. Learn how to dance. And it's interesting to me. I've had numerous times of having to teach, you know, your ward how to ballroom dance, or And people say, I can't do this. I can't do this. Yes, you can. Can you walk? Yes, you can dance then. So just move. And it's a great – for ballroom dancing, it's a great icebreaker. All barriers are broken down because everybody becomes equal. You know, they're all terrible together. But you know what? Try it. You know, it's great. And I'm sure that in many aspects, ballet could have the same.
Definitely. I mean – typically, ballet dancers, they end their careers early. So they end their careers 20s, 30s. Very few go beyond that into their 40s because it is such a demanding art form. But the great thing about working at BYU is that we have students that have said, I just always wanted to take a ballet class, and now I have the opportunity. I know I'm an adult, but I just want to try it. And those are the classes that are so fun to teach because they have no prior experience. They're coming in fresh, and you can really build an excitement for the art form with those students. An example, I taught this last spring term, and I had a lady in there that was probably in her 50s, and she said that she had made the decision that she was going to do as much with her body before it couldn't do anything as she could. And one of her dreams was just to move the way a ballet dancer would. And I admired her so much that she signed up for these classes with, you know, 18-year-olds. And there she was working just as hard, even harder, to achieve the aesthetic, the technique, the look. She just really inspired me to really prove that at any age, you don't have to be a professional dancer. That doesn't have to be the goal. But to move, to dance, to express with this God-given body that we have, there's nothing like it.
Now, although these are very different dance forms, what makes them the same?
Well, I often say movement is movement. And our vocabularies sometimes are different because I'll say it this way, but she's saying it the other way. But dance is the universal language. I mean, if I'm dancing, I don't have to speak Chinese. I don't have to speak Russian. Russian dancers are gorgeous. Chinese dancers are gorgeous. We all speak the same language.
And I think, you know, one of the underlying things, one of the beautiful things is that we all use our body as an instrument. And that is why it becomes so universal and so reachable to everyone, because we all have a body and we're all experiencing this earth life in a body, and to be able to express in whatever form of dance it is just a wonderful thing.
You know, there's a lot of new information out these days about mind and body. As you are working with your various dance forms, how is that working on you emotionally? Because your body is moving, your body has an effect on your spirit. Have you noticed if it's done anything for you emotionally?
I often think that, you know, there are people that they want the emphasis on math, science, and reading. That's it. Uh-huh. I can't imagine living in a world where you didn't do something that touched the spiritual side of your body or the spirit. You know, the soul is the combination of the body and the spirit. But I can't imagine ignoring that altogether. It just seems so cold and so void of any recognition of our spirits. I think the way your body moves is part of that in a dance form. So
I think they're all, of course, all connected. And that's what we hopefully teach, that these dancers are expressing emotion, that everything is linked when you perform, when you dance, that you're glorifying our Heavenly Father, that you're really connecting into the Spirit, like Kurt expressed. It's just a beautiful thing to find that connection, because dance isn't just physical. It is emotional and it is spiritual. And through the movement, through the expression, you can find that place where not many people go.
Well, Kurt, Shaney, thank you so much for being with us on Insights today. I appreciate it very much. This has been a fun discussion.
Thank you.
This has been Insights on the Mormon Channel from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We invite you to visit our website, mormonchannel.org, to check out this and other programs. Feel free to email us at mormonchannel@ldschurch.org.
and let us know if there are topics you would like to know more about. Thank you for listening. I'm Marilee Stallings.